The gravel road narrowed, and the pines pressed close. On Wednesday, August 18, 2021, a friend eased her vehicle to the edge of a pullout in the La Salle Mountains, phone to her ear, Keelan's father on the line. She had checked one drainage, then another. Now the air fell quiet, a mountain quiet that makes small sounds feel loud. She stepped through brush toward a creek. Sunlight flashed on water. Something was wrong in the shade. Deputies arrived and marked the ground. By sundown, two names broke like a wave across Moab. Keelan Schult, 24. Crystal Turner, 38. Newly married. Both dead from gunshot wounds. 5 days earlier, they had been alive in town, talking about moving their campsite because of a man who worried them. In the hours after that decision, someone found them. Before the week ended, fear settled over Moab, and a question would not let go. Who went into those trees? Chapter 1. The Road Up La Salle. The mountains rose southeast of Moab like a high blue wall. Midweek in August, the forest roads were dusty and rutted. The friend drove alone and kept the phone call going. She had already checked one clearing where Keelan and Crystal had stayed before. She looked for details that felt like them. A small fire ring. A tarp. The way they parked off the track to keep distance. The search was not official at first. It was worry turned into movement. Keelan's father had called from out of state on Wednesday morning, August 18, 2021. He had not heard from his daughter for days. Messages stacked up without reply. That was not normal. He needed eyes on the ground. The friend agreed to drive. She knew the pullouts that were quiet and the drainages where water held on into late summer. She knew how Keelan and Crystal liked to camp with space around them. Moab had felt tense since the weekend. In town on Friday night, the couple talked about a man who made them uneasy. They called him a creeper. The phrase moved between friends and then to family. The meaning was plain. Someone had come close to their camp and crossed a boundary. The couple decided to move. They picked a new site somewhere up in the aspen and pine, away from crowds. By midday Wednesday, the sun lit the switchbacks white. The friend slowed her vehicle and checked the tree line. No tents. No bright gear. She drove higher until she found a small track that dropped toward a creek. She pulled in and parked. On the call, Keelan's father asked what she could see. She held the phone close and walked with care. She called out once and waited. The only reply was water on rock. She found signs first. The ground showed use. A flat spot. The suggestion of a fire ring broken down. She moved toward the shade. Then she stopped. The phone call became breath, and then words that were hard to shape. She had found Keelan. She kept still and told Keelan's father she was calling the sheriff. She did not search farther. Deputies took the drive up the mountain with urgency. Grand County deputies secured the area and began the slow work that scenes like this require. They set a perimeter with tape and posted someone to keep a log of who entered and who left. They checked for safety hazards. Then they walked lines. They took photographs with scale and without scale. They marked casings and impact points. They noted blood patterns and ground disturbance. They protected anything that could be lost to wind, water, or curious hands. Within a short distance, they located Crystal. The scene told them little about motive. It did tell them both victims had suffered gunshot wounds. The creek ran cold beside the work. The mountains, which had looked like a wall from town, now felt like a closed room. Word moved with speed down into Moab. Friends gathered with phones in hand. The names reached family members in other states. The shock folded into a single sentence. They're gone. Investigators widened out from the scene in measured circles. They looked for shoe impressions that matched or did not match the victims. They noted vehicle tire patterns in dust. They measured distances from tent to creek to likely approach paths. They asked themselves how an offender would have moved in and out. The position of the tent, the trees, and the slope either hit a person or exposed a person. They drew it as a simple map and walked it again. The first hours were about control. Secure the place. Record before anything changes. The second task was time. When were Keelan and Crystal last seen alive in town? When did they drive into the mountains? When did communication stop? Investigators built a simple timeline. The couple had been out on Friday night in Moab. Afterward, they talked about a man who alarmed them. They planned to shift campsites. By Saturday, silence began. Friends texted. Calls rolled to voicemail. Days passed. Detectives split tasks. One team stayed with the scene and supervised the collection of physical evidence. Another went back to town to gather the last sighting information. They visited the bar where the couple had been seen. They requested security video if any existed, and if it was retained. They identified staff who worked that shift. They collected statements from people who knew the couple and had seen them that week. They wrote down phrases exactly as spoken. They looked for consistencies and for sharp details that do not tend to change between tellings. The early interviews produced a clear idea. The couple had felt watched or bothered. The word creeper was not a formal term. It was a feeling reported in plain speech. Investigators did not assign guilt based on a word. They kept it as a lead. They wrote down the locations the couple had mentioned camping. They checked whether anyone had followed them out of town. Witnesses did not report a tale from the bar. That did not settle the question of who came to the campsite. In Moab, the news raised fear. Residents asked if the killings were random. Outdoor workers and guides looked at the mountains and recalculated risk. The sheriff's office balanced two duties. They shared what they could to calm the public. They protected details that matter when someone confesses or when a tip comes in that mentions facts not released. Families pressed for answers. Detectives were mindful of the line between public trust and investigative need. Back on the mountain, the medical examiner team worked under shade. They documented injuries and position. They recorded the state of clothing and the environment. They controlled the chain of custody for anything removed. Transport was careful. The path down was rough and long. The truck moved slowly. The evidence tech checked seals twice before they rolled. In town, detectives opened the digital side. They requested call detail records through proper legal process. They asked about tower activity in the area near the campsite in the likely window between late Friday and Saturday. They built a list of devices seen by the network. The mountains often make for patchy data. Any line that could place a phone near the scene would help. They also began to look for digital sources that sometimes capture sound by accident, such as security devices at rural properties or trail cameras used by landowners. They logged what was requested and who to follow up with next. Friends and co-workers described Keelan and Crystal as deeply connected to each other and to the community. They were newly married and known in town. The victims' profiles were not gossip to investigators. Profiles help anticipate movement and contacts, and they guide victimology. Who were they with last? Did they have recent conflicts? Did anyone fixate on them? The answers in this case did not point to disputes. They pointed to a sense of unease about a man near the campsite. The sheriff's office put out measured requests to the public. They asked for information from anyone who had been on the mountain that weekend. They asked for dashcam or phone video from people who drove those roads between Friday night and Sunday. They asked nearby property owners with cameras to preserve data. They cautioned against speculation that could harm unrelated people. The volume of tips rose. Each one needed sorting and logging. Some had names. Some had only a truck color or a partial plate. Some were feelings with no facts. The job was to separate what could be checked from what could not. The physical scene yielded ballistic evidence. That offered a path if a firearm was later found or test fired. The terrain suggested likely approach routes to the tent. The creek made a soft bed for footprints, but water also erased. Investigators documented any mark that held shape through the afternoon. They took casts where possible. They protected those casts with care through transport. They bagged and sealed everything that could carry biological material. By the second day, the scene was cleared, but the work had shifted to labs and interviews. The mountains kept their quiet. The questions moved to town. Who had motive? Was this targeted or opportunistic? Was there a link to work or to acquaintances? Did anyone leave town quickly? Did anyone go dark on their phone in the window that mattered? Detectives circled back to the bar and the friends who heard the word creeper. They asked for any small remembered detail. A voice. A vehicle. A face by the door. A moment at the parking lot that felt off. In the first week after the discovery, rumor ran faster than confirmation. The sheriff's office discouraged strong claims on social media. They were careful with what they released. Families lived with both grief and a barrage of guesses. The balance stayed the same. Release enough to keep the public engaged and helpful. Hold back what would test a confession or an accurate tip. The chapter of a case that begins with discovery ends with a working timeline and a manageable list of leads. By the end of August, investigators had both. They knew when the couple was last seen in town. They knew the rough window when communications ceased. They had physical evidence from the campsite. They had the anchor phrase about a man who concerned the couple. They had hours of interviews and a stack of tips. The next move would depend on two streams. The first was digital and forensic. What the lab could confirm about ballistics and any recoverable DNA, and what the call detail records could show about devices in range of the towers those days. The second was human. A person with first-hand knowledge or a confession to an acquaintance. Investigators prepared for both. Either stream could break a case. Either stream could also stall. The mountain stayed. The town went back to work. Patrol cars did slow passes through trailheads and pullouts. Friends left flowers and notes near places the couple liked. The families pressed for answers with steady voices. The question at the center did not change. Who carried a weapon into that small clearing near a creek in the La Salle Mountains on Saturday, August 14, 2021? Who fired and why? Chapter 2, Leads and the Digital Window. The mountains faded behind patrol cars as investigators settled back into the sheriff's office. Evidence bins stacked against a wall marked La Salle. The first phase had ended. Now came the slower work. Interviews, digital traces, lab submissions, and time stamps that might line up with an answer. The victims' profiles came first. Keelan Schult worked at a cooperative grocery in Moab. Crystal Turner had recently taken a job at a McDonald's nearby. They were known faces, open, kind, always together. Married only a few months, they lived in a converted van, alternating between town stays and nights in the canyons or forests. Friends said they kept their life simple, close to the ground, drawn to quiet. That made their deaths even harder to accept. Detectives logged every report of someone who might have crossed paths with them. The creeper reference dominated early leads. Friends recalled Keelan saying, "If something happens to us, we were murdered." It wasn't gallows humor, it was unease spoken aloud. Investigators weighed how literal that might have been. They noted when and to whom it was said. The bar in the timeline. Friday night, August 13, 2021. Keelan and Crystal had been seen at Woody's Tavern in downtown Moab. They played pool and talked with friends. Witnesses placed them leaving sometime after 9 p.m. One friend mentioned the pair's plan to move their campsite because of the strange man nearby. That timestamp became the last confirmed sighting while alive. Detectives canvassed the area around the bar. They checked for surveillance footage, entrances, parking lots, neighboring storefronts. Moab was small, but cameras dotted key corners. Some captured the couple walking hand in hand, heading toward their silver Kia van. There was no visible pursuit. The footage cut off when they drove out of town. Digital work begins. On August 19th, subpoenas went out for both victims' phone records. The terrain of the La Salle Mountains limited tower coverage, but even partial data mattered. Analysts mapped the last pings. Keelan's phone last connected to a tower southeast of town late Friday night. Crystal's signal followed a similar pattern, with no data after early Saturday morning. The silence that followed fit the timeline of the shootings. Another analyst worked on what law enforcement called environmental audio. A local property owner had a motion-activated security device about a mile from the mountain road the couple might have used. Around 11:35 p.m. Friday, the microphone picked up faint pops, 5 spaced seconds apart. The clip was brief and distorted, but analysts flagged it. It was not proof, it was pattern. Meanwhile, technicians at the state crime lab tested shell casings found near the tent. The weapon had been a semi-automatic handgun. Ballistic striations matched across the casings, meaning one firearm had been used. No registered gun owner in the immediate area matched the caliber yet. That fact would become important months later. The leads. Tips poured in. A transient scene near Cane Creek. A man camping alone who left town in a hurry. A possible connection to an argument overheard at a gas station. Each tip demanded verification. Detectives spent hours eliminating names. The creeper description, male, possibly local, unkempt, camping nearby, fit too many. Rumors bloomed across social media. Posts speculated about drifters, travelers, even other high-profile visitors in Moab that week. Detectives tracked the flow of misinformation, mindful that public theory can bury truth under noise. They released calm statements. No arrests have been made. The community should remain alert, but not alarmed. A few calls offered something useful. One neighbor remembered a man driving an older silver Ford pickup near a pullout on the same mountain road. Another described hearing what sounded like gunfire Saturday morning, but dismissed it as hunters. Investigators logged both reports. The human layer. Inside the sheriff's office, investigators interviewed dozens of people. Co-workers, bar patrons, nearby campers. They wanted any hint of a conflict or stalker. Each answer led to more paperwork and more uncertainty. There were no threats on record, no restraining orders, no feuds. Detectives next traced purchase receipts. The couple had shopped for groceries Friday afternoon at the Moonflower Co-op. The transaction time, 4:32 p.m., aligned with known surveillance footage. That placed them in town just hours before they vanished. Every confirmed data point anchored the timeline tighter. The local gun community was checked discreetly. Dealers confirmed no recent suspicious sales, matching the ballistic profile. Pawn shops logged firearm inventory for cross-reference. Nothing obvious surfaced. Lab reports and frustration. Weeks passed. The Utah State Crime Lab returned preliminary reports by early September. Casings and bullets bore consistent markings from one weapon, likely a 9mm. DNA recovery was minimal, outdoor exposure, water from the creek, and time had degraded material. Trace tests on fabric and soil offered only mixed samples too small for comparison. Still, one partial fingerprint from a metal mug found at the site was uploaded to AFIS, the automated fingerprint identification system. No immediate hit came back. That didn't mean it was useless. Sometimes partials link years later. The sheriff's office briefed the families weekly. Keelan's father, Sean Paul Schult, began public vigils called the Moonflower Rides. He traveled to Moab and spoke with reporters, pleading for anyone with information to come forward. He kept pressure on officials without crossing into interference. "We just want answers," he told a local outlet. Crystal's relatives echoed that need. She was kind. She deserved peace, her sister said. Moab, meanwhile, grew uneasy. Outdoor guides canceled trips in the La Salle foothills. Locals checked locks twice, narrowing the field. Detectives turned back to digital records. Cell tower data yielded a few unknown devices in the same sector near the time window. Most belonged to travelers passing through. One number stood out: a phone active in Moab that Friday evening, then moving east overnight and never returning. The owner was not from Utah. Investigators began tracing it through carrier logs. The signal trail led beyond state lines, into the Midwest. But before they could contact the owner, new information arrived. A tipster called from out of state, saying a man he once worked with had confessed to killing two women in Utah. The story was vague, told in fragments, but it named the right area, Moab, the mountains of Van. Detectives marked it priority follow-up. The tip referenced a man who had left Utah in late August 2021 and later died by suicide in Iowa. His name had not surfaced in early canvassing. Investigators requested his digital records and vehicle information. They learned he had indeed lived temporarily in Moab that summer. The missing link. While waiting on those records, detectives cross-checked ballistics. A handgun recovered after his death, a 9mm, was test-fired. The casings matched those from the campsite. It was the first definitive forensic bridge between evidence and a suspect. The lab report arrived in late 2022, after meticulous confirmation by state and federal examiners. Even with that match, the case still lacked motive. There were no known connections between the man and the victims. They had not worked together or shared circles. His background showed transient labor, brief stays, and mental instability reports. A journal entry suggested paranoia and anger toward people camping near him, but it contained no direct mention of Keelan or Crystal. The investigation team faced a paradox: strong physical evidence, but no living subject to interview. Legal closure and emotional closure were not the same. The sheriff prepared the public announcement, careful with words. "Based on ballistic evidence and corroborating information, we have identified the shooter. He is deceased. The investigation is considered closed." The emotional weight. Before the announcement, families were briefed privately. They wept but also asked what every family asks: why? The sheriff could not say. The suspect's writings gave no clear motive. He had left Utah quietly and taken his own life weeks after the murders. Investigators revisited their steps, checking for missed accomplices or alternate explanations. None fit the evidence. It was, they concluded, a single-actor crime. Still, within Moab, unsolved became the public word. Without a confession or trial, people struggled to accept closure. Detectives archived case files. They marked exhibits for long-term storage. The mountains froze under winter snow. forensic teams wrapped up the final documentation. In early 2023, the sheriff's office released a summary confirming the ballistic match and timeline. Chapter 3: The Break in the Cost. Snow lingered on the peaks above Moab when the call finally came from the state lab. The email header was short: ballistics match confirmed. It was December 2022, more than a year since Keelan Schultz and Crystal Turner were found in their tent. The confirmation meant the case could be closed. But the mood inside the Grand County Sheriff's Office was subdued. Closure without justice felt like a door shut on an echo. Investigators read the report twice. Test fires from a 9mm handgun recovered in Iowa matched the shell casings collected at the La Salle campsite. The weapon had belonged to a man named Adam Pinkasiewicz, a 45-year-old who had worked briefly at a local McDonald's alongside Crystal Turner in the summer of 2021. He had left Moab soon after the murders and later died by suicide. The connection, when viewed against the digital trail and statements from acquaintances, was as close to certainty as the department would ever have. The lead that broke the silence. The tip that led to Pinkasiewicz had arrived months earlier through an acquaintance. The man told detectives that before his death, Pinkasiewicz confessed to shooting two women near Moab. At first, investigators treated it cautiously, a secondhand claim from another state. But when they checked his employment history and travel records, the puzzle started to align. He had worked at the same restaurant as Crystal until early August 2021, leaving abruptly. His vehicle, a silver Ford pickup, matched one seen by a witness near the mountain pullout. Phone data showed a device registered to him traveling from Moab toward the La Salle range the weekend of the murders, then heading east out of Utah days later. Detectives had heard many false confessions during their careers, but this one came with a weapon. When Iowa police cataloged his belongings after his death, they included a 9mm handgun. Utah investigators requested test firing. The match was definitive. Microscopic grooves on the shell casings aligned perfectly with those found beside Keelan and Crystal's tent. Naming the suspect. In late December 2022, Sheriff Stephen White held a brief press conference. The room was quiet, local cameras set on tripods. Families sat together near the front. White read from a prepared statement. Based on the totality of evidence, ballistic confirmation, statements made by the deceased suspect, and supporting digital records, the Grand County Sheriff's Office has identified Adam Pinkasiewicz as the person responsible for the homicides of Keelan Schultz and Crystal Turner. Reporters asked if the case was considered solved. White answered carefully. It is considered closed. The suspect is deceased. No further arrests are anticipated. There were no applause lines, no sense of victory. Reporters pressed for motive. The sheriff shook his head. We do not have one. None that can be confirmed. The weight of an answer without a why. Families often describe such news as a second loss. Keelan's father, Sean Paul Schultz, thanked investigators for their work, but said the outcome left him hollow. I wanted to look someone in the eye and ask why, he told a Utah station. Now I'll never get that chance. Crystal's sister said she felt torn. Relief that their killer was known. Grief that the story would end without explanation. It's hard to call it justice when the person who did it can't stand trial. Detectives shared the feeling. For many, this case had consumed nights and weekends. They had combed miles of mountain road, interviewed dozens of witnesses, waited months for lab results. The final answer, a name linked to suicide and silence, provided only partial peace. The town's reckoning. In Moab, word spread quickly. Locals had lived with unease since the summer of 2021. Campers avoided remote sites. Visitors asked if it was safe. After the announcement, conversations in coffee shops and gas stations turned to relief mixed with disbelief. He worked right here, one resident said, pointing toward the McDonald's on Main Street. Nobody even knew. Others spoke quietly about how small the town really was, how paths crossed without anyone realizing what danger sat beside them. The sheriff's office updated its website, case closed, December 29, 2022. The page listed the victims' names and a brief narrative summary. It cited Pinkasiewicz as the offender and his death in Iowa. No motive. No additional suspects. The investigation, in official terms, had reached its end. But unofficially, questions lingered. Why had the couple's kindness provoked violence? Was it a chance encounter or a grievance born from proximity and paranoia? Did the suspect follow them up the mountain that night, or stumble upon them by accident? investigators could only theorize. Inside the evidence files, the evidence vault in Grand County still holds the tent poles, soil samples, and shell casings that built the case. The handgun sits tagged and sealed. Digital data, transcripts, and photographs fill binders labeled La Salle 2021. Each entry represents hours of methodical labor, scene mapping, tower data extraction, interviews, and forensic comparison. Among the notes is a copy of a conversation between detectives and the Iowa acquaintance. He recalled Pinkasiewicz describing voices in his head, feeling hunted, and wanting to cleanse evil. Detectives could not verify the mental state beyond those words, but it hinted at deep instability. It may have been motive enough, fear twisted into delusion. The case file also includes letters from community members. Some thank law enforcement for persistence. Others plead for broader attention to mental health services in transient worker populations. One note, and signed, reads, "We all lost something that week, safety, trust, maybe even faith. Families and aftermath." By spring 2023, the families had returned to the mountains. They placed flowers near the creek where deputies once worked under tape and heat. A small wooden sign now marks the site, "Love Wins, KNC Forever." Jean-Paul Schult continues to host remembrance rides in Moab. He invites anyone to join, no matter how they knew the victims. His words remain steady. They deserve to be remembered for how they lived, not how they died. Crystal's family held a memorial in Arkansas. They released lanterns over a lake, each bearing her name and Keelan's. Friends say the light scattered, then rose together, two points merging as they drifted upward. Lessons and legacy. For law enforcement, the case underscored the value of persistence and digital forensics. Without the combination of physical evidence, ballistic analysis, and out-of-state cooperation, the truth might have stayed hidden indefinitely. Still, investigators acknowledge the limits. When a suspect dies, accountability ends at paperwork. Prosecutors cannot argue evidence before a jury. There is no confession to test under oath. For families, it leaves an ache where a verdict should be. The community of Moab carries that paradox, safer now but changed. Campers still travel into the La Salle Mountains, but they look over shoulders more often. Locals still mention the creeper, a reminder that danger sometimes hides in plain sight. The cost of knowing. The final briefing report closes with one line written by the lead investigator: "Case closed for records, open for memory." It reflects the emotional cost that lingers after even the most conclusive investigation. For the families, the question remains: why that night, that place, those two people? The sheriff's office holds the same answer it offered at the press conference: we may never know. Closing reflection. At sunset, the La Salle Mountains still turn pink above the desert. Tourists drive past not knowing the story that unfolded there. The creek still runs, washing through stones marked by time and silence. Moab moves forward. The mountains stay the same. Somewhere between them lies the space where two lives ended and a community began to reckon with the meaning of solved.